You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Raining Jay.
Hey there, we'd like to welcome you back. This is the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We are the Raining Jays. I am John Corrales of Mass Live. And joined by Jay King, the kid from The Athletic, who's hanging out in Houston as the Celtics hit the road. We're going to talk about that road trip, Houston being very shorthanded potentially. Jason Tatum had some interesting comments about his progression. But since we have you here, Jay, the people, they're clamoring for Jay King's takes on the Christmas Day overtime win against Philly. They want to know what the kid thinks.
Basketball is good. Basketball is fun. It was just a really entertaining game. I thought from the start, it was clear that the Celtics were pretty locked in. And it was clear that Kyrie was just on another level. Like, that first quarter, he's played a lot of really damn good quarters for the Celtics. From an all-around perspective, I'm not sure any of them has been better than that first quarter against Philadelphia. 16 points, 5 rebounds. He took a charge. He was getting deflections. He tracked down an offensive rebound that none of the 76ers seemed particularly interested in securing. He slapped a rebound and started a fast break the other way. Like, he was doing everything. And that's on top of going like 7 for 11 or whatever he did from the field. So just a powerhouse performance from Kyrie. And I thought it really showcased the improvements he's made this season, because it's not the same Kyrie. In some ways it is. Like, he can still do beautiful things with the basketball. He can still put the ball in the basket as well as just about anyone on earth. But the defense is just on a completely different level. And I don't know exactly where he ranks among point guard defenders now. I just know it's a lot better than it used to be.
Yeah, well, you could see him with the energy that he's expended throughout the season on the defensive end. It's been fantastic. And we were talking about it last night on the post-game podcast, where Kyrie was channeling Marcus Smart in so many ways. He was just diving in for those loose balls. Was it overtime where he flew in to save the possession?
The offensive rebound?
Yeah.
That was probably the best rebound he's ever had.
Probably. That looked like Wes Welker, old school, diving between three people and catching a football. Like, I can't even comprehend how he did that. And he saved the possession. He basically saved the end of the game and gave the Celtics a chance to run things out.
Yeah, that was probably the best rebound of his Celtics tenure. He's just expending energy in ways that he didn't before. And it's very obvious that he's talked a lot about how he wants to improve defensively and be this guy who can help you both ways. And he's actually done it. It's really night and day, his all around effort from what it was before. And then Philadelphia just lagging back on screens just allowed him some open shots in addition to all the other scoring he did. So,
well,
just a powerhouse game from him.
Yeah, and that's part of Philadelphia's problem, that they have trouble against guards that can shoot, because that's how they play pick and roll defense. They sag a lot. You posted the photos right on Twitter where Embiid was just in the lane, and Kyrie was just wide open. And Kyrie even said it last night after the game, where he was kind of confused by how much space he had. But that's the Sixers. And part of the Sixers' problem is that they don't have anybody that can guard a point guard like that. They don't have anybody that can check Kyrie or anybody close to Kyrie's level or anybody who plays similarly to him. And the only thing they can do is hope that by sagging off and playing for the long two, that those long twos don't fall at an efficient enough clip to hurt them. And if the other guy's not shooting well enough, well, then great. That defense works. But that's what they're hoping for. They're hoping for 19 footers out of Kyrie, but Kyrie was hitting basically everything. So that kind of didn't work for them last night.
Yeah. And it's really in some ways a really fascinating matchup, because obviously you have Embiid, who's going to try to beat the hell out of the Celtics down low. And you've got, you know, Ben Simmons, who the Celtics are going to abandon anytime he's at the three-point arc. And they were ridiculously aggressive helping off TJ McConnell, like to the point where I was legitimately laughing in press row at how far Kyrie Irving was playing off TJ McConnell. And, you know, you had that one play where three defenders sprinted at JJ Redick as soon as he got the ball. And that happened because Kyrie Irving was like a mile away from TJ McConnell and helping extremely aggressively, like as aggressively as you could possibly help. And Redick was kind of like, what in the hell just happened?
And that was funny. That clip, yeah, is so hilarious. The synchronicity between the jumps and that, I mean, that was just, it was just beautiful.
Yeah, it was unreal. And then at the other side, it's like the Celtics tried to use their speed, and it's what they did in the playoffs last year. Like Marcus Morris said it yesterday. He's like, we didn't think those guys could guard us. No disrespect to Sarge, but we didn't think those guys had any chance of guarding us. But they went small a lot last year. Like, I remember game one, they had like Terry Rozier and Shane Larkin lineups, which they didn't really use a lot last year. But then yesterday, you know, they stuck with Terry Rozier pretty deep into the fourth quarter before going away from him next to Kyrie Irving. And okay, well, if you guys have trouble guarding point guards, how about trying to guard two of them? and so it's an interesting chess match to watch. And if the Philadelphia doesn't have anybody like Kyrie was guarding Wilson Chandler for a little while, and Philadelphia like couldn't take advantage or didn't want to try taking advantage of that. And so it's just interesting chess matches everywhere. And then Philadelphia, like their top guys are so freaking talented. It's a joke. Like Joel Embiid, Simmons, Butler, those guys are so talented. I'll throw Redick in there because he's having an unbelievable year. But so it's fun to watch. I think the East playoffs, like second round and beyond, is just going to be supremely entertaining because there are a lot of different style teams. There are a lot of talented players. And I think it's just going to be a lot of fun once you get in the second round beyond the East.
Well, I'll tell you what, I am not afraid of Philly in a playoff series. I think this, if they meet again this year, the only caveat is unless Philly makes a move, they need players that can help them with their depth. They just need more guys that can step up and play somewhat effectively, because right now, if this is the matchup, they just match up terribly against the Celtics. They can't guard the Celtics effectively. Embiid is the way the Celtics played, and I'll say it again, I think they played him pretty well. And if they have Baines instead of Tice, then they're screwed. Philly is screwed.
Yeah, the Tice Embiid matchup was just a bloodbath.
Yeah.
Absolute bloodbath. Like, Embiid was just posting up wherever the hell he wanted to post up. Tice had no prayer.
Right. But if he's out there against Baines and if he's out there against Horford, like, I think Horford generally defended him well. And Embiid is a monster, or as Brad Stevens likes to call big guys like that, he's a real load. But he is going to score on basically anybody. But it's how he scores that I think makes what the Celtics do defensively so effective, because the post-ups, even if he scores on a post-up, he usually takes three, four dribbles. And if if that's what it is, if he takes 3-4 dribbles and it takes 7, 8 seconds, 9 seconds, that's basically the entire possession. It's two passes, get it into Embiid and get out of the way. That keeps guys off rhythm. That makes it so other guys aren't touching the ball. Most of those guys are standing around. And if it's a miss and the other Sixers are standing around, it's a chance to get out and take advantage and get out on a break. So if that's the case, I'm happy with the way that goes. The Celtics let Ben Simmons do whatever. And really the wild card is, does Jimmy Butler go win a game for you, which he certainly can do. He didn't do it last night, but he certainly could, and he can certainly play better.
I was stunned they didn't give it to Butler in the last possession of regulation. Yeah, absolutely stunned.
I was listening to some Philly podcasts, and they were kind of saying the same. We talked a little bit about it last night. In the end, J.J. Redick getting a pretty good look for two is a good possibility with the tie game that it's going
to
score.
But the thing there is, you don't have to guard Simmons.
Right.
Like, if you ran the same set with Butler and Redick, it's a lot tougher to guard because you have to defend both players in the set.
Right.
So I was stunned they didn't do that.
Yeah, I agree. But that's an entirely different subject for Philly people to talk about. What do you do with Simmons in that situation? Do you call a timeout and get him out of there? I don't know. Or draw something up, but...
Or throw it to Embiid, see what happens. The guy's a monster.
Yeah, true, but...
but it's tough to post up on the stretch, cause especially when you want the last shot.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. The play should have been Butler with the ball and something else, either or even Redick with the ball and Butler, but whatever. That's probably a better play. But that's the Philly game. The Celtics win in overtime, and they're on to Houston, which we will talk about in a couple of minutes. But first, when we return... Jason Tatum explaining what he thinks is the next step in his development. It's coming right up here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Let's start by reading the Jason Tatum quote. He says, after the Philly game, "I didn't shoot it as well as I would have liked to. For me, I think my next step as a player, -, I admire all the top players in the league and how they affect the game when they're not scoring. They just try to help their team win. And that's what I am trying to be, just trying to affect the game any way possible. Rebounding, getting a block, trying to get a stop, even when your shot isn't falling, because at the end of the day, all that matters is whether you win or lose," close quote. So that's the quote from Jason Tatum, and it does sort of feel like that's a point of emphasis that he's been told, I think, recently, and he's kind of repeating it, and it's a good thing to repeat because I think it's absolutely right that when your shot's not falling, you go out there and you do other things to help your team win. And in a way, when you watch Kyrie doing those other things when his shot is falling, that really puts the onus on these guys. Like, look, you got to go out and you got to do the little things. So interesting that Tatum said that, and his shot wasn't falling, but I think he was effective in that game. He played some pretty good defense, Jay. I thought he did a pretty good job, most except for the three-point shooting.
Yeah, I mean, he's played defense since he got in the league, though, which is weird.
I didn't say it like it was a surprise, but like
no, I'm just saying it's weird to hear him say that because he's acting like this is a new emphasis for him, and it's like, pal, they've asked you to play defense and rebound ever since you got to the league, and he's always been a very good rebounder for a wing.
He's leading the team in rebounding.
Yeah, he's always contested shots with his length and been a defender who can switch on to different guys. And to me, the thing is, though, he needs to get to the point where his ISOs don't just always result in difficult contested shots. And that, to me, is the next step in his evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Like get to the point where you can use a mismatch to help your team and not just to help you go and get a bucket. And I think as he gets stronger, as he gets smarter, those things will come along. But I mean, defense, rebounding, those things, he's always done that. And maybe he's putting more of a focus on it now, but that's like the, he's been on the number one defense last year, number two defense or three defense, whatever they are right now this year. And he's been key parts to that. So it's not like a new thing for him. So I like that. It's a good thing that he's trying to do other things when he's not scoring, but that's kind of always been who he is too.
I agree that there's more to, and I think when you talk about the other stuff, do the other things, it is the stuff when he's not scoring. So yeah, it's the rebounding, which he, like you said, he does. He is the team's leading rebounder. The ISO stuff is, I think, a key for him and for Jaylen Brown, for that matter. Both of them, I will eventually have to be able to find other guys consistently when they drive. And Jaylen,
I thought Jaylen had one of his best passing games yesterday.
I was just getting to that. Yeah, I think Jaylen Brown has been passing pretty well. And there's a lot of consternation with Jaylen Brown. There's a lot of anger surrounding Jaylen Brown. When you look at his numbers last night, he didn't have the best game there yesterday, but he did pass pretty well. He had a couple of assists. I think one of those was like a pocket pass down to a cutter baseline. Might have been to Kyrie. But he has done it in spots. The point is to do it more consistently. But getting back to Tatum, I actually think the number one thing that he's got to be able to do more than anything is start to just keep the ball on the on drives. We saw it was a problem last year where he was just fumbling it out of bounds without being touched. This year, I suppose his progression, because at least he's being touched now, like they're just slapping the ball out of his hands, which is a step forward, but next step is not getting it slapped out of your hands. And I think when he can start to do that, then he can start doing the things that we're talking about, which is passing and driving to pass and set other guys up and use your gravity to open up other players rather than just driving and putting your head down and hoping there's something good at the end of the rainbow.
That's a valid point.
Thank you for expounding on that. Really appreciate it. But yeah, I mean, look, that's where I think in with the way these lineups have adjusted, and I think the focus has gone to Jason Tatum a little bit now that we know that Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart are in the starting lineup pretty consistently. And it looks like that's just going to be how it is moving forward. That Tatum's the stuff that Tatum does on the floor is there's a big, big emphasis. Now, last night, he was 1 of 7 from three. He had open shots. Some of those shots were just way off, and shit happens. Sometimes you just miss. He was 7 of 18 overall, so that means he was 6 of 11 from 2, which is good, and 8 of 9 from the line. I think the big thing, that's the other thing that I wanted to talk about there, the free throw shooting. 9 free throws last night to lead the Celtics is huge. If he can get 9 free throws a game, he'll just be a dramatically different player, because you can shoot 39% from the field and still drop 23 points. That's what getting to the line does for you. So if we're looking at things that Jason Tatum can do, to me, the drives and getting to the line, but it's something we've talked about a lot. Getting to the line is huge for Tatum.
Oh, no doubt.
Jay King coming hot with the analysis tonight.
I'm really bringing it about Tatum.
You are really, I mean, so in depth. You got to play this podcast on repeat just to get Jay's takes. Really chew on those a little bit later.
All right. I'm just a legend out here today.
Why don't we take a short break and then return to talk about this road trip. Celtics in Houston for the, I forget what day it is, Thursday night basketball game. One of 3 road games before a crazy January schedule. Very home-heavy January schedule, which is nice. But Celtics on the road, we'll talk about it. We'll see if Houston's going to have any of its good players when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. All right, Jay. Celtics quick road trip. Houston, Memphis, San Antonio before returning home for four straight games to kick off January. But Houston, which I don't know. I know they're struggling, but I still think they're a very dangerous team, except they probably won't be because Chris Paul out with the hamstring injury. And according to Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle, James Harden questionable with a bruised left calf. Now, no Harden, no Chris Paul. I would say no win for the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Harden has been ridiculous lately, too. And the Rockets have kind of played pretty well. They, you know, beat Oklahoma City on Christmas. They have won, I believe, 7 of their last 10. Like, they're starting to turn things around. I think Harden scored 30-plus points in 8 straight games, which is bonkers. So they're starting to resemble what people thought they were going to be. And I hope Harden plays, man. I want to see Harden play.
No, I don't want to see Harden play. I think he sucks to watch.
I mean, he's the greatest.
The greatest what?
Offensive player in the world.
He is a guy who is going to get you a ton of points. He is going to hit some ridiculous shots. He is definitely a fantastic player, and I don't like watching him one bit.
Only some of us respect greatness, John.
He is aesthetically displeasing, and I don't. And I will give you all of the stuff that you said. He's a great offensive player. He does exactly what he's supposed to do. He's get to the free throw line, get to the rim, hit these ridiculous step back threes. Sometimes he travels when he does it, but whatever. I get it. He is.
So is it just the foul thing you don't like?
I don't like the way he plays. I don't like the driving to hunt fouls and the way he just, the way he's so successful at it. I don't blame him. If I were him and able to do it, I would do it. An average 30 plus points a game and be a freaking MVP candidate. I'm not blaming him for doing it. I just don't like watching it. I don't like watching him drive into the lane with his arms out with no intention of making a basket, just trying to score back, just trying to get fouls. Like, I just don't like watching it. Sitting there watching him take 15 free throws a game, it doesn't do anything for me.
You're a real Harden hater.
I don't hate him. I think he does exactly what he's supposed to do. If he was doing it for the Celtics,
hater. You're a hater, though.
That's not a hater. I just don't like watching it. I find it not pleasurable to watch as a basketball.
He's a maestro. He's five steps ahead of almost any other offensive basketball player.
Sure, doesn't have to make it pretty. It's effective, but it's not pretty. You sit watching a guy, you sit there and you watch him drive in the lane and specifically draw a foul and with his arms wide out, spread out like that, and you're like, ooh, baby, whew, yes!
The man's a genius. He's a genius.
15 free throws! Get that parade there, buddy! Can't wait to watch him take free throws!
He's a genius.
Yeah, no, he's great, Jay. He's great. He's an MVP candidate, consistently. He deserved the MVP that he won. But it's gross to watch him play. It's terrible to watch him play. I hate watching him play.
I mean, my guy's an incredible passer.
He
can get by anyone. He's strong as an ox.
Yep.
He hits outrageous shots at all times.
Yep. The highlights of James Harden are phenomenal. When you can condense it down to eliminate all of the bullshit, then it's amazing, because then you can see all the step backs in succession. The passes, I will give you that. The drives and the passes, the alley-oops to Capella, that is beautiful. That is gorgeous to watch, because he does it so well that he makes it look like he's going up for a layup. He's perfected this little move where it looks like he's going up for a layup, and it's just the exact same motion up until right at the very end where he launches it as a very short alley-oop to Capella. That there is beautiful. It happens twice a game, three times maybe. That's the thing. That's my point with Harden. Like, he does 7 or 8 gorgeous things a game, and you're like, wow, how is that possible? And then he does 40 things that make you go, oh, God, this again? And that's where I have a problem.
Wow. So James Harden does 40 things that are aesthetically displeasing to you?
Yes. Most of what he does is aesthetically displeasing. And look, this is not a hot take here. There are plenty of people with me on this bandwagon. There are a lot of people who will agree with me that watching James Harden is not pleasurable, but he is, in fact, and we will all admit it, he is, in fact, a spectacular offensive player. He's a spectacular scorer. He's great at what he does. It's just not
so
fun
you,
to watch.
So you won't like watching a Marcus Smart, James Harden matchup?
Oh, I love watching Marcus Smart go at James Harden. I like to watch from the Marcus Smart side. But I'm not like, that's different because I'm watching it from a Celtics perspective. But watching James Harden go up against, I don't know, the Denver Nuggets or pick somebody else, I don't know, the Orlando Magic. Like, I'm not tuning in to be like, ooh, can't wait to see what James Harden does tonight. Like, I know what James Harden's going to do that night. He's going to hit a couple step backs.
Yeah, he's going to get alley-ups. 40.
Yeah, he's going to do it. He's going to hit a couple of step back threes. He's going to hit a few ridiculous threes. Like, he's going to get, like, 15
he's gonna
or 20 points.
He's going to hit wrong-footed floaters. He's going to...
Yeah, and then he's going to take 20 free throws. He's going to have, like, a 20-point game and then 20 free throws on bullshit drives specifically geared towards getting free throws and not like he's driving like Isaiah Thomas did to get it fouled all the time. Like that part of his game really bothers me. And it's like half his points every night.
Well, what's funny is the Celtics need somebody more like Harden.
Oh, absolutely.
every single player on their team, if they could like upgrade their Harden levels of free throw hunting, then the Celtics will be so much better off.
Sure. If they could get to the line. Sure. Like I said, if he was on my team, I wouldn't be upset about that. But watching him as a neutral observer, I'd be like, oh, God, I can see it. I can understand why people don't want to watch it. I don't like to watch it either. All right.
I cannot respect this take.
Yeah, I'm going to put it out on Twitter. I'm going to put a poll out on Twitter when we're done recording. I'm going to ask people, is James Harden enjoyable to watch? Yes or no? And just see where the results are. There'll be plenty of no's. Plenty of no's.
I just cannot respect this take.
So did the Celtics beat the Harden-less Rockets? Do they beat them with Harden?
I mean, it'll be fun. It should be fun.
How do they do on this
road trip? The Celtics, as weird as they've been this season, they've generally played pretty well against really good teams.
And they I know do up their game.
There was the Bucks debacle when they didn't have Horford or Morris, but they didn't have Horford or Morris. They're probably two of the most important pieces at all times, but certainly two of the most important pieces in that matchup.
Sure.
Other than that, like a lot of their best games, the best games they've played this season have come against a top competition. So I imagine they're looking forward to it. And too bad Kyrie won't have his family celebrating Christmas with him anymore.
That was fun.
But, yeah, so.
You should just take him around everywhere.
I really want Harden to play, even though you don't because you're a hater. I really want Harden to play.
He is not enjoyable to watch. I'm typing as we speak. I'm typing the tweet. Is James Harden enjoyable to watch? Simple answer. Simple question, simple answers. Yes, no. And see what people say.
Just a bad take. Bad take.
It's not a bad take. It's a good take. It's a quality take. And I'm telling you, I'm sure the answer is going to be a little bit skewed because there's going to be a lot of Celtics fans. But I'm going to say that there's going to be a lot of no's, a ton of no's. We'll see what people say. We'll figure it out
Yeah, well, if you think our Twitter followers are smart, they're following us for a reason, because they're dummies.
Yeah, fair point, I guess. Oh, God.
No offense to our Twitter followers.
Aside from the mistake of following us, you're probably very fine people.
Yes, agreed.
So we'll wrap it up there. Next time we'll talk to you will be after the Rockets game. For a post-game podcast, until then, I hope all of you new listeners subscribe. I hope all of you regular listeners have given us that 5-star rating and a good review. And I hope you all share the podcast and tell everyone, listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.